expanded twice. Bonneville Dam, the second powerhouse, is beginning to come online. McNary Dam, Chief Joseph Dam, all of them have had additional units added. And right now, we're looking at raising the Rock Island Dam on the Columbia and Ross Dam on the Skagit River, raising them, increasing their power producing potential. They were built low at lower cost. They're being increased at a later time.
Well, if they did it that way, why did they have surplus power?
Initially, Grand Coulee Dam was built for irrigation purposes in order to it is owned by the Bureau of Reclamation. It is not a Corps of Engineers facility. And it had to be the size it was in order to provide the irrigation water that was needed at the altitude it was needed. And it was pushed through as an irrigation project, and power was a secondary purpose of the dam. And as long as you had the huge dam there, it was fairly easy to produce a surplus of power. Bonneville Dam was built for navigational purposes by the Corps of Engineers, and once again, once you've got a huge dam, certainly you should use it for what it's good for.
Then your recommendation is that when we do SACIT, we make it a smaller dam than we originally planned to meet just the needs of the park now, so we wouldn't have surplus.
I could not possibly, on the information I've got available, make any recommendation on any particular project in Alaska. I'd be hesitant to.
Well, I hear you recommend that we don't have surplus power. That's
resources should be brought online as they are needed at the times when customers are willing to pay what it costs to provide them. You shouldn't build resources that there's no economic market for. If resources will pay for themselves, both their economic and their environmental costs, they should be constructed.
It sounds to me as though you're saying yes.
That's an option that certainly, if it's available, should be looked at.
No more questions. Okay.
Thank you, Jim.
Thanks very much.
Is anybody else from out of town? I think Bill Corbis, are you here?
I'm not Mitch from in town, but.
Bill, would you like to testify?
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to come back another day.
You better get us while we have a quorum. It's, you might not be here next time again.
My name is Bill Corbis. I'm the manager of the Alaska Electric Light and Power Company, which is the electric utility which serves most of the Juneau area. I've been asked by one of your staff members, Mr. Lawler, to comment on this company's experience with electric heat. As you're probably aware, Juneau is very fortunate in having the Snettisham Hydroelectric Project, which serves virtually all of the area. We are a utility that's almost 100% hydroelectric. Approximately 10% of our residential customers are all electric customers. This has occurred over about a four-year period, and a large portion of that 10% came online just last year. I'd like to just mention briefly what the impacts of the electric heat have been on the utility, touch briefly on what we're doing about this rate design question, and if we were to do it over again, what we might do differently. First of all, typically electric heat customers use about three times as much electricity as non-electric heat customers. And their peak demands are normally increased more than the threefold increase that you see for consumption. So that this has a substantial impact on our system. It has severely taxed our transmission and distribution system this winter in particular, which is, I think everybody will agree, has been a relatively harsh winter. We're finding parts of the system which are inadequate. We're having to make substantially greater investments than we had planned on. And I think that you're going to find the same thing will happen for the other communities if they go to electric heat, if they develop a significant electric heat load. Peak loads are up substantially. almost a 20 and 25% increase in peak loads for this current winter as compared to last winter. Number of customer habits have come to our attention. First of all, builders like to build with electric heat because normally it's less expensive to put in electric heat systems than it is for oil, which is the alternative for this area. Builders tend, and customers themselves, tend to like to put in larger electric heating systems than are really necessary, which has adverse implications for the utilities. For Juneau and for probably all the communities, in, with the exception of the Rail Belt area, we are not interconnected with other utilities, and so that we have to provide backup generation facilities. With the increasing peak demands created by electric heat, we've got to the rate at which we put in backup generation facilities increases, and the marginal cost of investment for these backup generation facilities is more than our old facilities. I think this type of terminology and talk several of the previous witnesses referred to. So this utility, which has not been in for a rate increase since 1976, did initiate a proceeding in about mid-year last year, and we tried to put in a new set of rates which would try to discourage these the peak demand that the area was experiencing, but it did not, it was not an inverted rates in the sense of what is, I think you're getting at in Bill 758. We are interested, and I would think that many of the other hydro projects, and I'm more familiar with the Ketchikan and the Petersburg and the Sitka situation, where we've got Snettisham, and we are trying to generate the revenues to try to pay off the principal on the money owed on that project early in the life of the project in order to hold the long-term rates that we're going to pay for Snettisham down. So we are, in one sense, we're interested in selling more energy. On the other hand, we're not interested in having tremendous peak loads that cause us to put in significant investments and therefore rate increases at the retail level. So our rates, which we are proposing, is we are proposing demand charges for residential all-electric customers. We are also have put in some, or proposed some experimental rates, such as rates to encourage the use of heat pumps, but also to discourage the use of heat pumps during a very cold period of the year when they are inefficient and they don't make sense. We've proposed rates to encourage the use of off-peak heating devices, heat storage devices for residential customers, and we've also got interruptible rates already in effect, encouraging people to large customers to use electric heat, but that will be not applicable when we run out of hydroelectric energy in the Snettisham project, which someday it will run out of. Now the commission is still trying to decide what to do about what they're going to do about our rates, and it appears that they're taking a closer look at it. That they're in effect they're setting a policies or facing policy issues that they haven't faced before, and there are a lot of good points both ways raised during our rate proceeding. There seemed to be much more controversy in our rate proceedings, not about the magnitude of the rate increase or the necessity of the rate increase, but it was more about the rate design. If we had to do it over again, as far as going into this electric heat, and we're not very far into it now, there are several things we would do. We would have a better public information program, do a better job of informing the public on the pluses and minuses of electric heat. We have not encouraged or discouraged people as far as using electric heat, but I think we could have done a better job about explaining the implications to people of going with or not going with electric heat. We would have made a definite effort to control through some sort of legislation at the local level or getting the Public Utilities Commission to give us the authority to control the size of heating units for the area of a house or something of this nature. I've got some real reservations about allowing large commercial customers to use electric heat. Probably would have done something or attempted to get the commission to support us in doing something to limit large commercial electric heat customers. And I think earlier in the game we should have got involved in encouraging the use of off-peak heating for residential customers and even stress more strongly the use of interruptible energy for electric heating purposes. Thank you.
Rick?
What do you consider the, you have two figures on the conversion of BTUs to kilowatts. Do you have an idea what the conversion is?
Well, 1 kilowatt is the equivalent of, I believe it's 3,400, 1 kilowatt hour is equal to 3,413 BTU.
Okay, that's the figure used in this thing.
Okay. What's the ratio then in electrical energy, assuming the losses to produce heat, diesel fuel to electric heat in Juneau?
We've just sort of had every residence is different because every oil furnace operates at a different efficiency. If you were to talk to a plumbing and heating man who's in favor of oil heat, he would say that they operate at 75 to 80% efficiency. I've heard and seen studies that indicate for the area that it's somewhere between 60 and 70%. But as a rule of thumb, we say that somewhere between 25 and 30 times the cost of electric energy, whatever, if the cost of fuel oil per gallon is less than that, it makes sense to heat with electricity. In other words, let's say that electricity is selling for 4 cents a kilowatt hour. And so 25 times that is a dollar, or 30 times that is a dollar 20. So if your fuel oil is somewhere in that dollar to a dollar 20 range, electric heat makes sense. Now, this overlooks the fact that that's fine if you're building a new house, but if you've got an old house and you're thinking about tearing out or replacing the existing oil system with an electric heat system, you've got the capital cost to pay for the conversion from one heating system to another.
Okay, I was just trying to figure numbers out. And the 3413, is that an effective BTU in a radiating device out of a kilowatt? Or is there a
law of physics or chemistry or something like that.
Yeah, but is that actually produced?
No, no, that's what.
What's the efficiency average in that kind of conversion?
Well, that's what I say, it could go anywhere between 60 and 80%.
No, that's electricity.
Yeah, but if you were to take a oil furnace.
Okay, I wanted to figure out a way to take 138,000 BTUs in a gallon of fuel oil, and then take it times 50% efficiency, if that's average efficiency for a fuel oil stove, and run that back and turn it right back into BTUs, and you should be able to find out exactly where it's efficient to convert from gas to electric, instead of using kind of a round number figure, because it's close in Juneau, if I understand it right now.
It's fairly close, yes.
Okay, I'll ask you afterward and kind of through that.
Yeah, Phil, one question. When you're talking about efficiency of the, you know, switching from gas to, or oil to electric, I mean, there's, the statement would be made that it's efficient to make the switch, but also, I mean, do you take in consideration, too, is the long-range implications of taxing the system so that it's going to be efficient up to the very end when you don't have any excess capacity, but then you're going to have to build a new system to accommodate the next person to switch. So, I mean, is that put into this sort of the formula?
No, it's not. That's what I was trying to get at, though, the marginal cost. We're having this problem with, for instance, our standby facilities. And when Snettisham runs out, then we're gonna have a problem. In other words, when Snettisham runs out, then theoretically the next system we're gonna put in is gonna be considerably more expensive. But the other side of the coin is we've got Snettisham here where water's flowing over the dam, and if we can pay off or generate as high a revenue as possible to pay off the debt on the Snettisham project, it's going to lower the long-range cost of energy from Snettisham. So I guess if I were to look at Alaska as a whole, I think you've got to look at each individual project on a project-by-project basis.
Any other question?
And follow up on that. The long-term cost of project in interest on bonds, is that what you're saying?
Yes. Well, it's not the bonds, but the federal government lent money, in effect, lent money to the Snettisham project to build it. And the money they lent them has to be paid back.
And paying off quicker, it's based on interest, so that
right.
You pay off less interest.
Right.
Why couldn't we just talk to John here, talk about increasing the size of the dam if you've got water going on over the dam?
Let's put another terminal.
Are you putting another terminal?
Yes, Snettisham has two more steps it can take to increase its capability. One is putting the new turbine, and the other one is to increase the height of the dam.
So you will be doing that?
Well, hopefully the federal government will be.
One more check. Question. What has been going on with the surface power in the past at Snettisham?
It's been going over the, just been flowing over the
dam.
Just
let the water flow over the dam because right. You don't have use of the power.
So that's the other side of the coin on reverse rates.
It's going over. So the surplus power right there, right now, with a capital cost, but it's going over the dam while people use oil to heat their homes in Juneau at $1.35 a gallon.
Yeah, I guess that's true.
But what would it cost to put in the next thing to accommodate so everybody could go to electric heat?
It will be considerably more after we get through these two additions, which our current projections indicate that that will go into sometime into the 1990s. What happens after that, well, it might be considerably more expensive.
Isn't most of your problem in the distribution system, the bigger it gets, the worse it gets?
Well, our marginal costs there are the problem.
Any other questions? Okay.
Thank you.
Okay. Does nobody from out of town or anything, I hope? Okay, so we'll adjourn the meeting.